This is Dan Messick, and you're listening to Newsroom North.
This is Newsroom North. The aim of this podcast is to connect journalists in disparate media outlets in Northern BC and compare stories, share tips, and lift the curtain for listeners who want to know more about the people making the news. Newsroom North is hosted on CICK Smithers Community Radio at 93.9 FM and found on smithersradio.com.
We're here again in the CICK lounge car in the heart of Smithers. And today, of course, we have behind the board, Pam Hassan. And we have with us, Matt Simmons. Matt, how are you doing?
Hello, doing good. How are you?
Very well, very well. We're here again today to dig into what it is like working as a journalist in Northern British Columbia, Newsroom North. Something we wish that we all probably had was a big newsroom that we could go and chat and shoot the breeze and talk politics and all the other issues going on in the world. But that is not the case very much anymore, especially in this part of the world. But we wanted to touch base with you, Matt, to see what's going on in your world. You've been working as a journalist for a long time. Maybe tell us a little bit about how you originally got into the business up here in Northern British Columbia.
Probably the first foray was northward, like a local thing. I'd already been writing for a lot of publications, freelancing, Globe and Mail, Monday Magazine, Victoria, and various other publications, mostly magazine work, feature type stuff. And then moved up to the north in Rupert and started writing for Northward, which eventually led to me taking over Northward and did a stint as publisher and editor-in-chief until March 2020. Which we all know what happened then. Yeah, that's like how I got into it up here specifically. And then at that point, I put the magazine on hold and got the job that I have now, which is the Narwhal. And I'm the Northwest BC reporter up here. So that's filling a gap of sorts, making sure that stories that are happening here are getting told elsewhere or other people see them. Because, of course,
I wanted to touch upon just briefly. The type of stuff you're doing now is more investigative, as you mentioned, when you're working for Northward or before that, a lot of it is kind of feature. What are the type of stuff that you were working on before versus now? What's the difference? What were you working on feature-wise, the realm of Northward, the pieces that were in there, versus now doing some of these longer-term investigations?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think with features, I mean, with Northward really tried to strike a balance between celebrating the beauty and community that we have up here in the north. So there would be pieces that are focused on outdoor adventure or highlighting some really cool thing that's happening, doing a festivals roundup, things that are not really deep, impactful issues or holding power to account type of thing. But that said, there was some of that as well. There were articles you wrote for Northward and you wrote for me a few times. And did some, like really good reporting. I think I remember one standout you did was on the, like a really complicating the narrative type of story about the canceling of the trophy hunt, and how that was impacting folks up in the Stikine in particular. And I found that really interesting. And comparatively, the things I'm working now, I really try to take a, like a, this stepped approach where I'll take a particular issue, but then see if I can think, how does this issue apply more widely? If I'm looking into allegation of a mine doing bad practices for the environment, I don't want to just tell a story specifically about that mine and what it's doing or not doing. I want to look at what are the regulations around mining more broadly across the province, maybe across the country, maybe around the world. And so you take a specific issue, local, and then zoom out, step back, look at the really big picture, and then zoom back in. And that's my approach anyway.
Speaking of Northward, there was a rumor going around town, which is now not a rumor. What's going on with Northward? I hear it's coming back.
It is coming back, and not under my leadership. I found someone to take it over. And they are indeed in the process of putting together the first issue.
Cool.
And I'm still hanging around in the background in a sort of mentorship role. Yeah. So I've been given a deadline and I have to write for it. which is coming up fast.
Tables have turned.
Very cool. I think a lot of listeners and public just in general in this part of the world will be super pumped to see that come back in this 21st century digital age. It was always wonderful to see something in print. But nowadays, stuff like Northward is playing a pretty critical role because there's so few of them left, those types of publications. But what we do nowadays, generally speaking, a lot of it is online. And so over the last number of years, you've been working for the Narwhal, which has expanded in that time, started in British Columbia, and now it's across the country. And they're diving into various issues, mostly investigative. And it's always a question of what's the process of these investigations? We talked with Amanda, who also does a lot of investigating on various topics, FOIs, submitting FOIs. And so we wanted to chat with you about what does that process look like? As we discussed at the beginning of this, before we started recording, journalism often is a one-way street. We go, we collect the information, we talk to people, we interview, we document, and then we publish, and then move on to the next story. And that story that gets published, oftentimes it's there and it gets consumed by the public, but the public doesn't see what goes into it. It still takes a lot of time to go through this and confirm all this information. So what is the process that you've adopted when you go into a story? How do you approach a story, especially ones that are not so cut and dry?
That's another good question. Such a good question. I can tell you about the process of something I'm working on right now, because I do find it a really fascinating process, and you're absolutely right. Nobody knows. So my process, I'm working on an investigation right now that's been ongoing since late fall 2023. And so that started with a really small piece of work that I'd done that was an investigation in and of itself. And it led me to a question. I had a question about the things I was finding during that investigation led me to ask more questions. That's often the case. And I filed some Freedom of Information requests. And I think 3-4 months later, I got back a very large amount of records. And I knew immediately that there was a lot there that was interesting and relevant and important for the public to know. And I knew that it was such a huge amount of records that I had to be really careful about it to make sure I was accurately interpreting the data and not missing anything, because that would be bad journalism. Then, while working on other things, slowly started the process of teaming up with other journalists. And on this particular one, I'm working with the Investigative Journalism Foundation. And we basically started this really long process of how to go through this data. And we're getting really close to finish now. And that takes us to the next level, or the next step process, which is accountability. In this case, the government should be held accountable for. But I firmly believe in there's no gotcha moments. Basically, I put together a summary of everything we found, and including a whole bunch of quotes, and then put together what I call accountability questions. So these are really pointed, very carefully worded, super tight questions. No room for error and no room for misinterpretation. And then those go out to whoever, it might be a company or it might be the government, particular minister, prime minister, premier, whatever, and give them a super tight deadline, but enough time. And there's also, it's really important to be generous and say, if you need more time, let us know. And if they say we need more time, you give them more time and you don't publish. Because again, it's not about gotcha. It's about, we as journalists demand transparency. And so we need to be transparent ourselves, and we need to be fair. So that's the next part of the process. Then, and a lot of this overlaps. I'm doing multiple things at once. Yeah, it's, my brain is a mess. but then start putting together the final draft, and also reaching out to experts, people, either impacted people, by the things that we found, or academics or experts in various fields that are relevant to the data, and then tell them what I found, often just reading from that same accountability summary. Just read it to them and say, what do you think? And then ask some pointed questions that come out of that as well. And then it's go time and it gets published and we see what the fallout is. And then there's follow-up process as well. But that's my process with a big investigation. Other articles are not quite so tight. I think when the material is particularly spicy, I like to tighten it up as like just no ambiguity, no room for error, and that misinterpretation thing. I don't want anyone on the receiving end of it to feel like they were treated unfairly. And if I'm wrong about what I've found, if I'm interpreting the data or whatever I've found in that Freedom of Information document, if I'm wrong about it, I want you to tell me, and then I want you to prove it, and I'm going to fact check you. And if you're saying you're wrong, and then I go fact check you and lied on record, I'm going to print that too. But I think it's about the process of being fair, yeah, and reasonable.
I guess when you're talking about the process and when you approach a story, I often find that I have a pretty good idea of what I'm looking for, what I'm going after in particular, what the issue is or what the story may be. But oftentimes I show up and start talking to people and the story takes a turn. And then I realize that what I started out with, there's actually a much different or a much larger piece that needs to be taken on as well. And so your story kind of morphs from your original idea into this much different trajectory. And I find that often I try not to go into a story with a particular angle, a particular idea, more broad strokes, because I know as soon as I start talking to people, I'm going to hear things that I had no idea were going on. And then obviously that becomes the story, or it can. What happens in your process and your approach to these stories? Do you go into them with a clear idea, clear angle that you're looking for, or do you allow the people and the story just to tell itself and then you pick up where it's at?
Depends on the story. Yeah. If it's an investigation and I have a particular question that I want answered, I'm really stubborn and I stick with that question until I get an answer. And sometimes the answer then is, I have a story. It's okay. And walk away.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite stories I ever did, I had no preconceived ideas. I went in with nothing. I arranged to be able to go, and it was...
Tell us. What story?
The Ulican up in Nisga territory. I went to a youth science camp, and it was focused on Ulican. And yeah, I left all my ideas at home. I just said, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to experience and I don't know what's going to happen. And thank goodness my editor completely trusted me on that and said, yep, go. I took Marty Clemens, photographer, with me, and we went up there. We had no clue. I had a couple of preamble conversations on the phone with the researcher, and that was it. And I came out of that after 3 days. Beautiful experience. So cool. But yeah, I came back and I was like, I don't even know. And I had to tell my editor, I was like, just so you know, there is a story here and it's a good story, but I don't know what it is yet.
Mm.
And I asked her to just be patient with me and leave it with me for a couple of weeks. And then this happens to me quite often. I was falling asleep and suddenly it was like, got it. I got the story. And I wrote the whole first few paragraphs in my head, and then the next morning it just all came out. And that story I'm super proud of. It mm-hmm. was beautiful, and I ended up printing copies, took it up to the education center there, and they've got a bunch of copies they distribute in the communities. But yeah, I think what you're saying is really important, not to be too attached, because I think there's a lot of journalistic practices that have occurred, especially in smaller rural communities and in indigenous communities, where the reporter is really pushing for a particular angle or pushing for a particular story, and they're like, "Yo, this isn't what the story is. What are you talking about? Can you listen to us?" And yeah, historically, there's been, frankly, a lot of harm done in that respect.
It's
nice to hear you say that, yeah, you go and then you find out that the story isn't really there, or that there's a bigger story to be told, and you're open to that and willing to. Yeah. I'm curious, again, with you, do you have an example of something where...
You know what? Honestly, most of the time now, I'll do a little bit of research, but I know what to expect. I'm going to go, I'm going to talk to people, and they're going to tell me a story, and we'll find it from there. I've been doing that for a long time. I think the last time I went with some particular notion was probably a decade ago. Recently, doing a piece about what's been going on with the Niska LNG and whatnot, same thing. They're legitimate ideas on both sides of that conversation. And you don't really know until you actually start talking to people in particular. And I think the other piece, what you're mentioning, is I often have run into, usually, generally speaking, rural locations or rural publications, rural newspapers are stepping stone. Rural radio stations are stepping stone. You come, you work for a couple of years, you cut your teeth, and then you move on and usually go to a bigger city, a bigger publication. And so the staying in one place, especially in a remote, relatively remote, isolated place, you don't pick this stuff up. You got to spend time here. And I think what you're talking about is, if you had someone who came up from Vancouver from the Globe and Mail or Toronto Star and were just spending a few days on a story in Niska territory or what have you, they probably wouldn't get the nuances. And you only really pick that up if you live here. I would imagine that most people south of us have no idea what an ulikan is. And same way as people around here, they know the Nass is where you go to get ulikan. There's a little bit on the Skeena. Local people collect, but it's a much shorter run. It's much smaller. But up in the Nass, it's still a big part of them. Hobie is on its way. We're in February here. The crescent moon is soon coming. And that's when the ulikan start running. And so you want to know that stuff unless you lived here. So I think coming from outside, I've always found, for lack of a better word, took a little bit of pity on newbies that had showed up here to help them understand. Because to me, there's a lot of respect that needs to be given. And I often feel that, especially working in TV news, and that in TV journalism, that it's here today, gone tomorrow, and how quickly that turnover happens. Whereas I think what you've been doing, what Amanda does, what we've been doing is trying to dig in a little bit deeper. A lot of the things that we publish here at CACK News are more long form. I continuously have, you know, battles with editors and whatnot about why things need to be longer. There's context that needs to be understood and built. And I feel that even out of that, my objective is, am I getting the story right according to the people that I have the privilege of telling their story? What I care about is this story being told properly, and is it reaching the proper audience, right? And to that degree, the last thing I want to flip to you is these investigations, long and short, are quite complex, or can be quite complex. But again, a lot of the time, journalists live in a little bit of a narrow path. We publish something, and the question is, what is the impact of these investigations? You spend a year on something, or spend 6 months on one piece, and you got to sift through this really tough, hard data to find the story, essentially, right? We publish, and then what happens? I have always wondered, what is the impact? What is the real-world impact? Do people get fired if there's accountability that has been missed? Do regulators smarten up? We saw, case in point, with CGL, they paid out some fines to $500,000. It's a drop in the bucket in a $14 billion project. But I always felt you can't really hate on the company. The company is just doing what companies do. They're just building stuff. Whereas the regulators and the government are the ones that need to make sure that things are happening properly across the board. What's your take on this? What is the degree, or what is the gauge of figuring out if there is actually an impact on the ground, and what comes after?
Yeah, that's a really hard thing to quantify sometimes. Sometimes we don't know, right? Like, we don't know. You don't always know if there is an impact, or if there is an impact, what that impact is, especially behind closed doors. I did one investigation last year on TC Energy, the company behind Coastal GasLink, and somebody did get fired. And then I heard heard whisperings that the whole department that we were reporting on was in disarray after the reporting we published. And so that was a little bit of impact. Sometimes you genuinely don't know. The goal is, if you as a journalist see something wrong with our government, something our government is doing something, if you see that, your intended goal is to hold that power accountable and hopefully see the wrongdoing change and good. And what I think you're getting at is the sort of shouting into the void, like so often we are, and it appears at least that nothing changes.
Yeah.
One of my colleagues won the Michener Award last year for her reporting on the Greenbelt in Ontario.
Oh, yes.
And that was where the premier walked back the changes.
Yeah.
And so that was one of those clear examples of this reporting, holding power to account, tons of articles. It was lots, and then it got picked up by the Star and all kinds of other media outlets as well. And then the power, the government, said, okay, we got caught. We're going to walk it back. It's like the Nixon Watergate stuff, right? Like, that's the dream. It's not always going to happen that way. And sometimes you're not even going to know at all if there is. And that can, frankly, feel pretty defeating and despairing. And sometimes you are just shouting into the void. And that's, I don't know, it requires a thick skin and, stubbornness. So keep going. Now, I really try to balance it. Like I said, with the solutions journalism and things like that, is I don't just do this one kind of thing where it's a huge investment of time and energy and focus, takes up a ton of brain space, and then maybe nothing happens after. Like you get a really good article and feel proud of the work that you've done, but no change, no perceivable change. If I did only that, and that was the norm, I don't think I'd be able to keep going, frankly. Mm-hmm. So I try to balance it out with some different types of articles, and that's solutions, or like you were talking about, lifting up communities, like going and honoring their stories, and just do a mix of all the things, and hopefully all of it amounts to change overall. Power and change can come from lifting up a community and doing some really good work, honoring their stories. Then they feel seen. Then they feel that they're being listened to. Everyone wants to be listened to. That then empowers them to say more, to speak up more. And maybe other communities see it and they can go, hey, that community is doing this. I want to do that too. We should do it. And then they have conversations. Those kind of things, you don't always see the change, but I think there really is a power there. Mm-hmm. And I also, one thing that does keep me going is the idea of if you reach one person and you change that person, then it's worth it. So maybe these big investigations, it doesn't result in like a massive firings or systemic change within government, but maybe you've got a few people in government who read it and are like, oh man, we need to change what we're doing and we need to step up a little bit more. And they start doing that. That has real world impact, and I'm never going to know about it, but worth it.
Yeah.
Worth the effort.
Yeah. And as we know, I'm sure most people knock on government quite often, especially these days. But at the end of the day, there are neighbors, there are friends, family that work in these positions, that work in government, and that are trying to do good work. And so it's not necessarily pointing the finger at people individually, but more of the system and the constraints of that system, which we find all of ourselves living in. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. I was actually listening to a podcast last night about the TVA, which is the Tennessee Valley Authority. It's like a electric company in Tennessee. And there was an interview with the author of a book, and he was saying, I wrote this really critical book of the TVA, but it's not because I hate the TVA. It's because I need them to be great. And I really love that approach, is I'm working on these investigations that are really holding power to account. And it's not because I have a vendetta against the provincial government or the federal government or a politician or whatever. It's because they need to be better. Yeah. They need to be great. And I think that's kind of journalism in a nutshell, is we are the ones to point these things out, because who else is, like, the public? The public really shouts into the void, right? You send an email to your premier and MLA or whatever in there.
You're lucky if you get a response.
Yeah. Usually you just get the auto reply.
Matt, been enlightening. Thank you so much for the insight and for taking the time. Good luck in your investigations, and we'll be watching out for the next.
My name is Matt Simmons. I'm a reporter with the Narwhal, and I'm currently working closely with my editor, Mike D'Souza, on investigative duties.